Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, Francis.
How are you today?
I'm doing well. Not as well as you. I didn't come back from a glorious little trip across the pond.
Yeah, it was nice.
Yeah, I bet it was.
I have to say it was nice.
You snuck away for a little while.
Recorded a few shows before I left so that we wouldn't have too much of a break, but I was gone. I was in Ireland. I was in the Northern Ireland visiting some friends. I spent some time in Belfast, and I have to tell you, that really started my trip very well. The last time I was in Belfast was 2 years ago, and the Republic of Ireland has really, really been—it's been the Celtic tiger. You know, it's now the wealthiest nation in Europe.
I was just wondering if you were going to explain what that means.
The Celtic tiger is the strongest economy in Europe. It went from one of the poorest nations in Europe to being the wealthiest nation in all of Europe, and that has been accompanied by, especially in Dublin. My family's now lives around Dublin. The city of Dublin is just an easy, wonderful city full of music and new building, and it's amazing, the whole republic. But up in Northern Ireland, in the six provinces of Northern Ireland, it's been a slower go because they had so much violence for so long. It was a city that sort of rolled up the streets at night.
It didn't have the same tourism. It didn't have the same.
You're afraid
kind
of getting shot.
Right. It didn't have the
car blowing up next to you. But so it's recovering from that now. It's really starting to develop a nightlife. I had a great meal, best meal I've ever had in Ireland. I had in Belfast, and it was really nice. And
where'd you go?
There's a place called the Merchant Hotel, which I recommend highly. We'll put up a link on our website to it. I've had the only really great cocktail bar that I know of in Ireland, north or south. And there's a New Zealand bartender behind the bar.
So a cocktail bar in Ireland, is that where you get your Guinness in two size glasses? You can have it in the large glass or the small glass?
This guy was great. And he knew his stuff, and
cocktail bar. Would you like two cubes in your Jameson or one?
No, we went, and I brought my friend Lawrence and his wife Anne Marie. We Lawrence and I stopped there after he picked me up from the airport. We had a little lunch, and we went back for dinner the next night. And the thing about it is, in Belfast, they're in the somewhat fortunate situation of having been so poor that they didn't have enough money to knock the old buildings down. And so now people are, this is in a very old hotel with vaulted ceilings. It was just beautiful. And then I went to another bar as well, and I'll put all the links up on the website. And I saw in which was in an old bank.
A great, for me, some of my favorite restaurants are in old banks. It's like my favorite setting for a great, great restaurant.
So it was quite the nightlife, and actually I saw the Fortuny lamps that we imported from Italy. They had hanging from this bar, and it was really, really, I had a really tremendous time there. Had a wonderful time in the Republic with my family. And then I went to visit my friend, Peter Schleimer, who's been a guest on this show. He is, a motorcycle enthusiast as well.
But what he truly is a restaurant reviewer.
Well, he's not more
and
than
wine
that.
And wine writer.
He was a restaurant reviewer and wine writer for a long time, but he has just been promoted recently to editor-in-chief of a magazine called Vinaria, which is basically the most important Austrian wine publication. And they have another magazine that's affiliated, Vinaria Gourmet. Mm-hmm. And he is the man, in Austria and Germans and Austrians read a lot about Austrian wines. And I met him, spent a couple of days in and around Vienna with him, and we went to some great, great, great restaurants.
Now, you said to me, I got a phone call from you while you were in Austria, and you said, I may have just had the best meal of my life.
Yeah, a restaurant outside of Mödling, which is a suburb of Vienna.
Did you say Mödling?
Mödling, with the two dots over the O.
Mödling.
Mödling, that's what the two dots
mean. Mödling, because I would expect things to be kind of mediocre in Mödling.
No, that'd be Mödling.
Oh, sorry.
That's in the middle of England. Anyway, but in outside of Mödling, there's a restaurant called Hanna, which, I mean, I've eaten in a lot of the three-star restaurants in Paris. I've eaten in three-star restaurants in several countries. I think it was the best meal I ever had.
Really?
Most thoughtful restaurant. And we're going to try and get someone from that restaurant on
the
show.
Tell me what made it special. I want to know what informs, I mean, maybe the listeners do, but I'm curious as to what kinds of things they did to make you say, this is the best restaurant meal.
The whole place was feng shui. And it was beautifully appointed, designed to make you comfortable, all opened up on a long hillside. They had a pool that was maybe 50 feet by 125 feet, that was maybe 4 feet deep, granite, that was a waterfall over the one side, but they had carp swimming around in it. And there was a deck outside. They were actually kid-friendly.
Did they feed you the carp?
No, those were just for decoration. But they were actually kid-friendly.
So I go to restaurants like that sometimes where I pick my lobster.
Yeah, that's
and
a different kind of thing down in Chinatown. A whole different vibe going on there. Just gracious and elegant, tremendous wine list. And I did find that, I mean, of course I was with Peter, and Peter's bilingual, but so many people there do speak English, and so it's really a great place to travel if you're looking for a food destination. I think Austria is a really... is a great place, and we can recommend this place, Hana.
I remember, and I've only been to Austria one time in my life as a young teenager, and I just will never, ever forget how nice the people were in Austria.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we had spent some time in Germany, and they weren't as nice as they were in Austria. It was just they were speaking the same language, but they weren't speaking the same language,
right,
if you know what
right,
I mean.
Right. Well, we went in and, you know, we tried all of Hans Reisetbauer's eau de vie, the schnapps. They call it eau de vie. They call it schnapps in Austria, which are amazing and you can find in our restaurant.
And when you're talking about these Austrian schnapps, please don't think about what we've done to schnapps here in the United States. They really don't have anything to do with one another. They have more to do with eau de vies or grappa or brandies.
Anyways,
exactly.
So we did everything from that stuff that, you know, you can hardly find in the States. Actually, more and more you're finding Reisetbauer schnapps available here. I think we like to think we led the way.
We like to think that.
You can also find them
probably
at Del
Hans
Posto.
Led the way is what I'm
but he led
thinking.
It to, but he led it to us. And you can also find them at Del Posto in New York. But anyway, we went on, and the thing is, in Austria, when you go out, they have stocks of older wine. We were drinking wines from the 60s and the 70s and the 80s all the time. Grüner Veltliner is a traditional Austrian grape, and Riesling, but also some red wine, some Pinot Noir from the Wachau. And the meals were great. The company was terrific. This guy, Peter Schleimer, if you read German, Vinari is something you should really subscribe to. But then we went off, and Peter's a motorcycle enthusiast as well, and so he rented me... helped me to rent a KTM motorcycle, which is an Austrian motorcycle, very fast Austrian motorcycle, and I'm a guy who rides a big old slow Harley Davidson, and
it's probably better that way.
And so Peter, it is. And so Peter slowed down for me, but we went along the Wachau, and so we went along the Danube, all through the Wachau, and then up through the Darkstone Forest and into the mountains, and we went over to the city of Linz, and universally everywhere was nice, but riding along the Danube, I mean, you can just you can go all the way, and we would stop at these little local restaurants and go for a stroll along the Danube afterwards. Absolutely.
Sounds very romantic, Francis.
Yeah, me, my friend and his wife. Me and my friend and his girlfriend. Yeah, anyway, but it is a great place to go for food and wine. It's not extremely heavily touristed, so that it loses its own character.
Austria is very underappreciated, I think.
And if you're a motorcycle enthusiast, rent a motorcycle right along the Danube. You'll have a blast. You really have a blast. And you can stay at a lot of the wineries where they have little restaurant places, and you can get a lot of old wine, some of which I brought back as presents for you. So we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Captain LaGuardia Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is Dan Barber. He is the chef owner at Blue Hill and Blue Hill at Stone Barns in Manhattan and also in upstate New York. Very interesting restaurants that are right along the lines of what we talk about every day.
Dan, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Good. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So I've mentioned to people, I've been to Blue Hill in Manhattan a couple times. I haven't yet made it up to Stone Barns, although once I made a reservation and I had to cancel the day before. That's as close as I've come. But we read about you all the time, and you're doing a unique thing with the... Let's talk about the Stone Barns project and how that differs from most restaurants.
Well, it differs from most restaurants, I guess, because I'm blessed to have a Rockefeller behind me who... David Rockefeller is the grandson of the of the last surviving grandchild of the oil baron.
That definitely differs from our restaurant, Stan.
So he funded this project on what is an old dairy farm, a collection of stone barns that were built in the 20s, essentially so the kids, he and his brothers and sisters, could have fresh milk. And they enjoyed that while growing up, and then it's pretty much lay dormant, although there was a little bit of farming activity throughout the century, and then Mr. Rockefeller wanted to preserve it. He's now 90 years old, and it's a gorgeous sort of rolling 80 acres that reminds you of being in Vermont, even though you're 28 miles from Manhattan. And he restored the barn to their splendor, although they've been kept up beautifully over the last few decades. He converted one of the bigger barns into our restaurant, Blue Hill, and another of the barns is an education center. And the surrounding property is now cultivated with about 5 acres of outdoor vegetables and about 25 acres of pasture land for animals.
But this is more than just a beautiful restaurant that, you know, has some historic value to the building.
Right, in a bucolic setting. It's more than that.
This is a working farm with a purpose.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's very much rooted you know, the philosophy of pragmatism here. I mean, there's nothing Disney-esque about it. The farm is a separate company, both sides of it, the vegetables and the meats, and they sell to the restaurant at a fair market value, and the restaurant sets its menu and buys from the farm. So my menu and the food in the restaurant is really dictated by what is able to grow well on the soil and what's able to be raised well on grass. And then there's an education component, which is separate from both, and that goes towards explaining to the public a lot of what we're doing and offering programs, whether it be cooking classes or book signings or educational stuff that is around sustainable agriculture.
Well, now the idea is that most of what you serve there is really produced on the farm, isn't that correct?
Yeah, you know, it's either our farm or farms within about 250 miles is how we've... And so it's not just about our farm, it's about supporting local agriculture within the Hudson Valley and in New Jersey, actually, as well. So there's quite a bit of the menu that the farm doesn't grow, like corn, for example. You know, it's all over the menu right now. We're not really growing corn, at least enough to supply the menu. And then, you know, there's things that... are supplemented by our farm. But I'd say right now, you know, the meats, almost 100% of the meats are coming off the farm and nearly 60 to 70% of the produce for both restaurants, actually the restaurant in New York as well, gets its vegetables from the farm.
And now while organic is something that you guys seem to be striving for, it's not the be-all, end-all.
It's not the be-all and end-all, but, you know, yeah. I mean, it is an organic farm. It's 100% organic, and the feed for the animals is 100% organic and whatnot. But we often don't describe it that way, and it's the most often asked question. So, you know, I have to be ready to answer it. But we're not, you know, a certified organic farm because we, I think, go well beyond what, you know, is considered certifiable. And when if we were to be certified, you know, we would be answering the question, yes, we're an organic farm. So the conversation ends there, and we're not able to talk more about what we're doing and why we feel we've gone, you know, sort of beyond what it means to be organic because, you know, you and I have a certain set of understandings of what organic means, and you know, of your listeners, there's probably 100 different definitions ranging from, you know, frozen... So for TV dinner now can be organic, and mm-hmm. you could have, you know, organic tomatoes from Oaxaca, you know, delivered to your door. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of different associations to organic that are pretty hard set, and we'd, I think, ultimately prefer to define our own farm in the way that we see fit.
Well, and Francis, and just to give you a little piece of kind of how Francis and I believe, the certified organic isn't necessarily better, though I think that it's a good place for people to look. You know, if your calf is sick and it needs antibiotics because it's sick, I don't have a huge problem with that. If you're feeding all your calves antibiotics because you're giving them bovine growth hormone because you want them to produce more milk and they're going to get sick from that, I have a huge problem with that.
Right. I'm with you on that. I agree. And I would extend just what you said to fruit production as well. I mean, you know, it's near impossible. I would go as far as to say it is impossible to be a productive, that is to say, you know, economically viable farm in the Northeast, in New Jersey, or in the Hudson Valley with organic fruit production. It just cannot be done.
We're going to leave that there for a moment. We're going to be discussing that more in just a moment with Dan Barber, the chef and owner of Blue Hill in Manhattan and Blue Hill at Stone Barns in New York. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys Radio Show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Martin Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. And our guest today is Chef Dan Barber of Blue Hill and Blue Hill at Stone Barns. He's like the one of our heroes as far as local sustainable agriculture and bringing farm to table. We were talking before the break about how organic is really not the be-all and end-all of what's responsible eating and necessarily even good eating. You know, an organic tomato from Guatemala may not be a great choice, and the not-certified organic tomato from your backyard might be a better choice. Well, talk to us about issues of local. Why is local important, Dan?
I think local is important on a variety of different levels. I mean, one is just the idea that you can, for the most part, shake the hand of the farmer that's growing your food. And that may sound, you know, a little magisterial, and we obviously cannot eat that way today with everything that we buy for our families and cook for ourselves and our neighbors. But for certain, we've lost a lot of that ability. And, you know, that's both a wonderful way to connect with food and also a wonderful way to support your community. I mean, I think the local issue, you know, boils down to are you the type of person that enjoys open space and enjoys looking at farmland, because that's kind of what it boils down to in terms of your choices for dinner, that you have, you know, this wonderful asset in your hands, in your pocketbook anyway, in terms of voting for the kind of landscape that you want to be surrounded by.
Yeah, we definitely can vote with our wallets, that's for sure.
That's right, and we vote three times a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if not, it's one of those things where you look around and there is very little that all of us can have a say in. There's two wars going on. There's all the mishugana in the world, and what we can do with food is very profound because the marketplace responds. At least that's what I've learned along the way. The marketplace really responds, and so if you believe in these issues and you feel strongly about them in terms of the future for your children and your children's children, you've got to eat it.
Yep. Dan, some of us are voting more than three times a day.
Yeah, we're just voting all day long. We'll be back in a moment talking more about this great restaurant, one of the top-rated restaurants in New York, and one in New York City and one just outside New York City, Blue Hill and Blue Hill at Stone Barns with the chef, Dan Barber. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1130.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left at Captain Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
We're talking today with Dan Barber. He is the chef at Blue Hill in Manhattan and the very wonderful project Blue Hill at Stone Barns in New York State, outside of the city. Dan, we were talking before the show about why local is important. Now, Blue Hill at Stone Barns runs local, sustainable agriculture, organic and beyond in how the animals and vegetables are raised, and the restaurants use the food from your farm and from the local areas. Now, among the many reasons to eat locally, it's our proposition that if I sent one guy out to find the most responsibly produced tomato, lamb, whatever, in an area, and I said, you go find me the most responsibly produced, well-treated animal on good, you know, good feed, organic grains. And I sent somebody else out, and I said, listen, you go find me the tastiest lamb you can find me, that those guys are going to wind up at the same lamb. Am I right? Am I wrong?
That's great. I've never heard that before, but that's a great way of looking at it. I think 9 times out of 10, you're right. And I think you could extend that to tomatoes, and you could extend that to certainly this time of year to eggplant and cucumbers. And zucchini. So if you're right, you're hitting on the central point, which is the blessing of all of this is that to eat responsibly is to eat deliciously.
Right,
And that what you guys are talking about or what we're talking about today is rooted in that kind of hedonism. You know, it's pleasure. And I think that's probably why you know your restaurants are successful and why the future of this thing is so promising, because we're not talking about denial, you know, we're not talking about environmental
we're talking about the best of the best.
Yeah, right, and be greedy for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a wonderful message that I think, you know, and that's what I try and talk about at the restaurants and I'm sure you guys talk about, which is, you know, enjoy this stuff and want it so that you can, you know, repeat the experience outside of visiting Stone Barns, which is an expensive restaurant and which is, mm-hmm. a special occasion place to eat. And then you go home and you cook for your family for the week. Well, how can you replicate some of those pleasures? And you know, visiting the farmer's market, joining the CSA, becoming mm-hmm. more aware and more conscious of where your food comes from is one way to start.
Yeah, it is about the ingredients that you use.
Well,
But there's a two-pronged reason I feel for the best ingredients coming from the most responsible farmers, and I think that two-pronged reason is the one that I think is obvious to us, and the fact that you're putting better things in, your soil is better, your grasses are better, what your animal eats is more natural and more what it's used to eating, it's going to taste better. Okay,
right.
So you start with that premise, or how your fruits are growing is a more natural way for them to grow. You're picking them ripe, all those kinds of things. But I think there's a second answer to this, and when you find those people who care enough to put in this extra effort, because it is extra effort, what you're going to find is that they're taking more care, they're spending more time making sure things are perfect.
That's right. I think those two points are critical, and I would even put. To your first point that the soil and the animals are getting what they need in local agriculture and an agriculture that, you know, supports the kind of sustainability issues that we're talking about, that's got to be true. I mean, the reason to buy local, another reason to buy local is that generally speaking, it's a multi-diverse species or multi-diverse vegetable and fruit farming operation that encourages, for the most part, encourages a healthy soil. And a healthy soil is packed with nutrients and packed with flavonoids and the kind of things that make things taste good. But I go to your second point, which I think is enormous, which is, you know, that there's a backstory when you buy locally, which is to say, you know, you have some association with whom you're buying from and how it was grown and where it's coming from. And that ultimately makes the food taste better. And so, you know, at the end of the day, one of the great ways to enjoy food, I think, and it's proven throughout history, is that when you understand, who's behind it and the reasons for going in and some of the history, there's a context for which to enjoy food. And that only increases the flavor. And as a chef, you know, there's no seasoning that I can provide and no cooking technique that I can provide that's more appealing than a good story.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, too, that I think I was in eighth grade, and when we talk about these little family farms, these smaller farms, you're talking about more diverse products. They're not just growing 2,000 acres of corn. You know, and what I just started to say was, I think I was in eighth grade when I learned that you need to rotate your crops. And if you grow the same thing on the same soil all the time, you're going to deplete certain nutrients from that soil.
Which then you can replace with chemicals or
you know,
or
I mean,
not.
I think it was eighth grade science class that I learned that.
Right.
To me, it just strikes me as peculiar that how we grow, and I'll just use corn, for instance, in this country on a lot of our farms, is we just grow corn year after year after year after year after year on the same plot of land.
But to play devil's advocate, I mean, the agribusiness people say, well, you don't need to do that anymore. You just put in chemically what's depleted from the soil.
Right. Well, I think what we're describing is that, you know, there's a little bit of tension between business and between nature, because nature, as we know, just looking out the window, doesn't prescribe, it doesn't advocate growing the same thing in a monoculture, which is to say, you know, one species of one thing, you know, in a vast expanse without rotation, without some kind of variance. And that's not how nature works.
Well,
so what we've done is, you know, is a nod to sort of an industrial system for growing food.
Well,
that encourages, you know, one species growing again and again and again, and that's antithetical to what's out our window.
And let's put this out there. You know, the tension isn't necessarily between business and nature. The tension is between bad business and nature, because human beings living off the planet is good business. You can make there are good business opportunities there. But, you know, when you look at farm subsidies, for instance, those farm subsidies aren't going to local farms. The farm subsidies are going to crops so that we can sell them so that huge corporate agribusiness firms, you know, we talk about people getting off people off welfare. Let's get these guys off welfare. They are being subsidized to destroy the land because this is so intensive. You need to buy so many chemicals and use so much petroleum that they're subsidized in producing this food. And it's
to make the food artificially cheap.
And it's not the way to feed the planet. This isn't necessary in order to feed human beings. And it's one of the reasons that we say, and like to touch on a point that you made earlier, Dan, is that I think good taste is revolutionary, because we have a stage left is sort of a special occasion restaurants for most people. And Catherine Lombardi, you know, you could go there. It's a little less expensive. And Blue Hill at Stone Barns are expensive restaurants. But when people go there, and hopefully what you're trying to do and what I think that you accomplish very well and what we're trying to do is you know, achieve that pinnacle of taste where things are really great. Because if people have great taste, like you said, when they go home, they're not going to accept spaghetti out of a jar.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You know, and that's revolutionary in how we vote with our wallets. Is that what you're trying to do to help people have things that taste as amazing as you?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. You know, as the point is right, is to wake people up to, you know, a taste that is so pleasurable and so delicious that they want more of it. And generally, we are greedy people, you know, as it goes, and we want what we want, and we're willing to pay more for, you know, value received. And so, just like we demand a lot from our car companies when we go to purchase a car, we should be demanding a lot of food. And when we get those results, we should, I think, go after it more and more. And so you're right. I mean, but there are a lot of ways to go about doing that. And I think, again, going back to your point earlier, you know, the story is a big way, because it's sometimes very hard to, sometimes it's very easy to taste the difference between a great tomato and a mediocre tomato. That goes without saying.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it's very hard to tell subtle differences in flavor. And you know, for people who don't entirely indulge in great good food, and for those people who are very busy and food becomes, you know, of sort of secondary importance, which is a reality for a lot of people. It's unfortunate, and it's not the way we would want to live in the world, but it is a reality for a lot of people. You know, there's got to be other things that are associated with this that isn't just taste and that affect taste, and I think that story is a big one.
You know what, Dan? I think we're not demanding enough about our food, and I think we're also not demanding enough about our car companies.
Good for you.
We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking with Dan Barber. He's the chef at Blue Hill and Blue Hill at Stone Barn, some two of the most exciting restaurants in America. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
Economy Paver and Restaurant Supply Company is the oldest dealership in New Jersey. They've been equipping and supplying restaurants since 1932, and they know that to make great food, you need great equipment. You need equipment that doesn't break down, and you can't pay too much for it. Whether you need an emergency replacement or a wholesale kitchen renovation, Economy's knowledge, experience, and integrity are indispensable. Economy Paper and Restaurant Supply is a recognized dealer for all major brands, and they specialize in custom fabrication and ventilation. At Economy, they've got all the tools you need to get the job done, all in one place, all priced right, and delivered to your door. Economy is the only dealer in New Jersey that's been approved for on-site demonstrations of the Rational Combi Oven. Rational Combi Oven is an innovative combination of convection and adjustable steam oven. It's a powerful and versatile tool in your kitchen's arsenal. They also supply competitively priced paper products and all the non-food supplies every restaurant needs. You can visit the Economy Demo Kitchen on Broad Street in Clifton, New Jersey. You can also visit economysupply.com, then call them at 973-279-5500. That's 973-279-5500. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark Pascal and Francis Schott of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. Our guest today is Dan Barber of Blue Hill and Blue Hill at Stone Barns, Blue Hill at Stone Barns grows most of the food served in both of those restaurants, and almost all the food comes from the local area, and that's pretty revolutionary. Now, Dan, we had a gentleman on the show, one of the foremost taste experts in the country, a guy named Stephen Witherly, and he was talking about how when people eat processed foods, because they're so uniform, we crave more of them. We like it more the further we go on. And as food is uniform, it makes us crave more of the same exact food. And eating a diverse diet is actually a healthier way to live, and it also makes you less likely to sort of, you know, like eat that whole bag of nachos one at a time. You just keep going. You don't even know you're eating it. Are you very concerned with the health implications of eating locally and sustainably?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, that's one aspect that we talked about the backstory. We talked about supporting the landscape. We talked about a lot of things that, you know, are worth supporting local agriculture and sustainable agriculture. But certainly one that is of high priority for people is the health benefits. And that, you know, is something that I think we're going to be discovering much more in the next few years. And it really, you know, I was just looking at the statistic yesterday. In 1984, that's 20, you know, just a little bit over 20 years ago, we were, as a nation, spending 15% of our disposable income, about 15.2% is what the statistic said, of our disposable income on food, and about 7.6% on health care. Today, or last year, 2005, a little over 20 years, that number has essentially reversed. We are now spending about 8% of our disposable income on food and about 16% on health care. And one wonders, there's a lot of reasons for the rise in health care costs, the explosion in health care costs, but one wonders that if we put more of our disposable income, more of our money, and more, like was mentioned before, of our government's money in healthy food, food that's raised healthy and food that's grown in healthy soils, one can only wonder that would do to the amount of money that we're spending on health care.
Well, these types of foods that we're talking about, these processed foods, they're a relatively new invention in
the
world.
In the course of human history.
You know, they're what, 40, 50, even 60
That's
years
right.
old tops.
We're just beginning to see the effects of those inventions.
Exactly.
You know,
But one of my favorite things to do is I talk about, you know, my grandmother. The second restaurant is named after my grandmother. And I talk about how my grandmother didn't buy a free-range chicken because there was no such thing. They were all free-range chickens. Okay, they were chickens. They grew up on a farm, and she picked the slowest one.
You know, I think that it's interesting to frame the issue that way because I think people often try to cast you and we, Dan, and what you do as revolutionary. And in a way, it is revolutionary. But in a way, what you're doing is traditional.
Yeah, rooted in peasantry.
Right. I mean, what you're doing, people have been doing for, you know, 14,000 years.
Right. We're just trying to take back our country from the people who ran us over.
Pop-Tarts,
right.
That's revolutionary.
We tend to have very short memories, and when it comes to food, you're right. We have discovered a whole new vocabulary that didn't exist before World War II.
And what's funny is we've allowed the corporate agribusiness world to take over the old words. so that we need new words. So that, you know, so corn now, there's not corn and organic corn. There's corn and organic corn, as if organic corn is the new thing. It should be, you know, there's corn and there's genetically modified
GMO
agribusiness corn.
Corn.
You know what I mean?
That's right.
It's crazy to take back the, to try and take back the issues that way.
I think that point is a capital one, and goes back to your original question, which is, you know, why don't you say you're an organic farm on, you know, with where I'm farming? And that, the answer is because corporations increasingly, as we're seeing in the last couple of years, and the announcement just this past month of Walmart going heavy into organics, the corporate world is going to begin to own that very coveted word, or if they haven't already. And one, you're right, I think we need to come up with a new vocabulary and move beyond words that can become dumbed down and co-opted for the sake of selling more food.
Well, let me help you with what's going to happen. We're going to come up with new words. They're going to co-opt them. We're going to come up with a new word again.
Right.
They're
going to
co-opt it. We're going to come up with a new word.
And all those crazy hippies.
That's
on the
all
left.
Part of the revolution.
So, yeah, that's right.
So let me ask you a question that often comes up. Your restaurant is very local and very seasonal. How do you deal with the months? I mean, you're in the Northeast. How do you deal with the winter months? And, you know, they say April is the cruelest month. How do you deal with the early spring and the winter months?
It's April and I want an apple. Yeah. It's April and I want an apple. What are you telling me?
Well, from January, let's say from mid-December, I mean, it's still December. You know, there's a lot of stuff at the farmers markets. I know New Jersey, especially. I mean, there's a long season there. So from, let's say, from January through the end of April, yeah, it's tough, and it's really tough to talk about these issues and back it up if you're, you know, a modern day eater and like we are, you know, a modern restaurant where you can serve things from, you know, you've got to serve meals during that time. So, you know, the percentages of local agriculture during those times dipped. For me, to about 18%, 18 to 25% is where I average. And luckily at Stone Barns, we have a large greenhouse where we grow vegetables all year round. So I'm able to supply the restaurants with, you know, a good percentage of organic, delicious food. But there's no question that, you know, in the Northeast, we suffer from, you know, the ability, the lack of ability to grow 12 months of the year. And my answer to this, I'm not a purist.
Actually, you know what? Hold on a second. We're going to hold on to your answer for just a moment. We'll come back with it while you're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1155. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Our guest is Dan Barber of Blue Hill in Manhattan, Blue Hill at Stone Barns, just outside Manhattan in New York State. And we were talking right before the break, Dan, about what it's the challenges of having a very seasonal, very local restaurant in the Northeast in the cruel months of January, February, March, and April. So,
and you had an answer for us.
My answer is, you know, I'm not a purist, and I'm not, squeaky clean about this stuff in the sense that I don't think you have to believe in everything we've just talked about and eat cabbages and root vegetables for the winter. I mean, I think that there's a large food chain out there, and there are some fantastic growers, and there's a very sort of efficient distribution system in which pineapples and citrus fruit and produce from California and Texas and even Mexico gets to our door at reasonable prices and often from very good farms. So, you know, I think we can indulge in that chain. The question is percentages, you know. And at this time, you know, in August, if you're September, if you're, eating pineapples and citrus fruit and produce from California that you could otherwise be choosing to eat locally, then to me and to you guys, I think there's something really wrong with that, and that you're affecting the way, you know, the world is used, literally. But in the winter, you know, we are in 2006. We're not suggesting that we need to be thrown back to, you know, the turn of the century, Shaker Village. We are very modern nation, and we can indulge in some of the blessings of that modernity. So I would suggest that we enjoy food at that time without a lot of guilt.
We don't need to eat the acorns out of the tree.
and a Guatemalan tomato, if you're having it in January, is maybe necessary, but if you're having it in New Jersey in August, you're nuts. Anyway.
I think you're nuts.
Absolutely. Hey, Dan, thanks for being on the show. We're going to link Blue Hill at Stone Barns and all information about you at our website, restaurantguysradio.com, so people can find out and absolutely make a reservation well in advance because it's hard to get in.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks
for coming. Hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to the Restaurant Guys. I've been to Blue Hill in Manhattan. It's great. I've been there a number of times. Had a great meal. And we're going to make Blue Hill Stone Barns before Thanksgiving. You and me, we're going up on my motorcycle. You want to ride in the back?
No chance.
Just kidding. All right. Hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Chai.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.